Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link on this Friday, August the 12th. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, vote counting is underway in Zambia in the general elections that is expected to be a tough battle between incumbent President Edgar Lungu and his main rival Hakainde Hichilema.
Zambia has changed presidents through the electoral process on a number of occasions. This election is so close to call that it's impossible to predict who Zambians have voted for.
Germany's Minister for Economic Cooperation and Development, Gerd Müller, is in Rwanda discussing a new Marshall Plan for Africa. And the Nigerian army court-martials 20 soldiers for allegedly selling arms to terrorists and for murder and human rights violations.
This is a clear indication that rule of law is at work in Nigeria. It is a clear indication also that the era of impunity is gone.
Plus, we hit the road in Berlin with an African driving instructor with exceptional qualities. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Vote counting is underway in Zambia after nearly 6.6 million people cast their ballot on Thursday's presidential and parliamentary elections and in a referendum on a revised constitution. These elections are expected to be a tough battle between incumbent President Edgar Lungu and his main rival Hakainde Hichilema, who are both confident of outright victory. A total of 9 candidates vied for the presidency, which could lead to Lungu and Hichilema failing to garner more than half of the vote to win, as required by the electoral laws. As Kathy Sikombe reports from Lusaka, Lungu and Hichilema are both calling for calm before the final results are released.
Security has been tightened in the Zambian capital Lusaka, with the main tally center, Mulungushi International Conference, barricaded and heavily armed. 9 presidential candidates are all eagerly waiting for the result, but the main rivals are incumbent President Edgar Lungu and opposition United Party for National Development leader Hakainde Hichilema, who are both confident of victory. Both candidates cast their votes in their respective areas in Lusaka with large crowds of supporters. Zambia's Electoral Commission Director Priscilla Isaacs said the polls were largely peaceful, but added that there were some challenges in some parts of the country.
We have made arrangements with ZAP that all the poll staff in these areas be retrieved by ZAP after the close of poll and the counting has been done. The affected wards, as a reminder, are Sulwana Ward. That is where the last, that's about 5 polling stations, were delayed. Then we also have the polling stations in the Andamo Ward and Mbume Ward in Sioma.
Despite the calm and high voter turnout, police reported that there were some incidents of violence in Itezhi in southern Zambia, where several people were injured. Also, there was confusion at the Kabulonga Boys Secondary School polling station, where opposition candidate for the United Party for National Development, UPND, cast his vote. Hakainde Hichilema told DW that he plans to lodge a complaint with Electoral Commission after some of his party election monitors reportedly discovered an official working for ECZ who was allegedly a cadre from the ruling Patriotic Front.
We are expecting free, fair, transparent and credible elections. Yes. Zambians expect that, nothing short of that. Free, fair, transparent and credible elections. Inside here, we have found an official of the Electoral Commission who is a PF cadre,
yes,
right inside here. So that is not acceptable. We're going to complain right away to the Electoral Commission. We've told the returning officer to remove that individual because it's a biased individual in our polling station.
Yes.
And that does not help in delivering a free, fair, transparent and credible election.
The country's founding president, Kenneth Kaunda, also urged Zambians to remain calm and peaceful as they await official results, which will start trickling in the next 1 or 2 days. For the first time, according to the amended constitution, the country's next president will have to win 50 plus 1 votes, failure to which the two closest rivals will have to go for a second round within 37 days.
Kati Sikombe reporting from Lusaka. In these elections, Zambians voted for president, vice president, parliament, mayors, councillors, as well as in a referendum. What does this say about Zambia's political climate? My colleague Jane Ayeku Kumet put that question to Alex Vines, head of the Africa program at Chatham House in the UK.
Look, this election, I think, shows with a high turnout the vibrancy of democracy in Zambia, that people care about the future, have been to the polling stations and have voted their opinion. So this is a good signal for Zambia that democracy is alive and well.
Zambia does not have a history of electoral violence. What's your assessment of the entire electoral process right from the time of campaigns?
Well, there has been some violence, yes, but Zambia has a history, as you say, of peaceful elections. The importance of Zambia is that ever since it was one of the pioneers of peaceful transition in 1991, when Kenneth Kaunda got defeated by Frederick Chiluba and there was a peaceful transition, that has been the case ever since. And Zambia has changed presidents through the electoral process on a number of occasions. This election is so close to call that it's impossible to predict who Zambians have voted for.
Apart from that, how can you rate President Lungu's performance during his 1 year in office?
President Lungu certainly has suffered from the collapse of commodity prices, particularly copper. This is not something that he had hoped for. There have been plenty of complaints of increased corruption and weakened governance over the last year.
Whereas the opposition has been criticizing President Lungu for failing to lead, there have also been some sort of or some kind of praises that he's actually done well, considering that he's been able to construct some roads. Would you give him a positive performance in just 1 year in office?
Well, again, infrastructural development and showing that there's been progress isn't unique to President Lungu. It's something that happens in the run-up to an election. My question would be, was that the right infrastructural development? Will it last? So is it well done? Was it a good quality appraisal? If that's the case, then I think President Lungu should be congratulated. But it is about the decision-making of where this infrastructure development is and whether it is actually enhancing economic backbone for Zambia's development.
Alex, you certainly understand Zambian politics in and out, I suppose. What is your opinion would be the biggest challenge to the president-elect?
I think the biggest single challenge, whichever president is in the presidency after these elections, will be how to create jobs and how to manage Zambian economy in a commodity downturn. So how to get a more diversified economy, one that is less based on extractive industries, particularly copper production. It's not easy. Zambia's in competition, and its GDP ratio has significantly increased over the last year. So there are not easy options, whoever is the next president. They're going to have to make tough decisions.
Alex Vines, head of the Africa program at Chatham House in the UK. And this is DW's Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Now, Germany's Federal Minister for Economic Cooperation and Development, Gerd Müller, is currently in Rwanda seeking a new focus for development aid. But before Rwanda, Müller was in Senegal and Niger, where he met several African migrants who were trying to make the dangerous journey through the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. Germany wants to reverse migration trend, and Müller's ministry is offering financial support to migrants who are willing to return home. DW's Adrian Kish was with him in Senegal and in the Nigerian desert town of Agadez, a transit point and hotspot for migrants. I asked him, why did Müller choose to go to Agadez?
Agadez is a hotspot for people transiting, coming from various Western African countries and going toward Europe. Niger is not really a country of origin for migrants, but people coming from Nigeria, from Gambia and a lot of other countries are passing through this town before they are passing through the desert, through the Sahara Desert. So it is a strategically very important point, and this is why the minister also wanted to visit it, wanted to see it. More than 100,000 people are passing this town down each year, trying to find their way towards Europe. And what we saw there now is also a trend of people coming back. And now he visited one of these camps by the International Organization for Migration that were set up for people who are willing to return. So there were about 600 people in this camp who are willing to return, who are willing to go back to their home countries.
So you talk about over 600 people who've been trying to get to Europe, didn't make it, but now they are willing to return back to their home countries. How desperate are these people? Can you maybe give me a vivid description?
Well, of course, the people I talked to were very desperate. I mean, just imagine they had to collect a lot of money from their families to make it all the way to Europe. And they made a lot of promises, of course, to pay back this money once they are in Europe. But now once they try to get on the road and they noticed how difficult, how dangerous it is, they decided to change their opinion and decided to go back. This is, of course, a major step. And for many of them I've talked to, they were, of course, also a bit embarrassed of returning to their family and making this decision and telling them, sorry, I failed, I didn't make it, but I spent a lot of money for it.
How does Germany plan to reverse this trend, to basically get most of these migrants interested and find something to do back home rather than trying to make the dangerous journey across the Mediterranean to come to Europe?
Well, let's say it's kind of working on two levels for the German Minister of Development Affairs who visited Agadez. On the one hand, it's of course working with the authorities in Niger. As I said, this is a transit country, so he tried to talk to the president and other people responsible and tell them how important it would be to close those migration routes. And he found a lot of willingness from the side of the authorities in Niger as well. And also, this would be the second part, is finding alternatives for the people on the ground, create employment, make sure there's proper education on the ground, not only in Niger, but also in the countries of origin. This is what he kept on saying again and again, that Germany is also willing to invest more into the future of young people to make sure they get a proper education, but also to make sure they will have the chances to have jobs on the ground and they are not forced to get to Europe.
Apart from his visit to Senegal and Niger, Gerd Müller is also in Rwanda, and there he's been talking about a Marshall Plan for Africa. What does he mean by this?
Well, the minister mentioned this Marshall Plan for Africa already before his journey, saying that there is a need for a bigger push and a bigger investment into the continent. But it is not very clear what he means with it. Of course, he wants to have more investments, but I doubt that he means it in the way that it will work like the former Marshall Plan was functioning. Like, just remember how this one looked like. The Marshall Plan was created by the Americans after the Second World War to help the European countries to get back on track, to get the economy working again. And what they did was basically they gave loans to European businesses. The European businesses then paid back the loans to their local governments, and the governments used the money to create infrastructure for railways, for streets, and so on. And this was the way a lot of European countries got back on track. But this was, of course, a major investment. And for now, it is not clear if this is the idea of the minister. And of course, it is also not clear where this huge amount of money could come from, because it's definitely something that can't be done alone by Germany. This needs to be done by a number of nations, both from the European, African, possibly also the American side.
DW's Adrian Krish in Niamey. And still to come on the program, on the road with an African driving instructor in Berlin. But before that, Nigeria court-martials 20 soldiers for allegedly selling arms to terrorists.
Human rights.
The Nigerian army on Wednesday court-martialed 4 officers and 16 soldiers for murder and selling firearms to terrorists. Brigadier General Victor Ezugwu, acting commanding officer of the 7th Division, said the court-martial will achieve timely and quick dispensation of justice to the 20 soldiers within the theater command of Operation Lafia Dole. This court-martial also includes crimes relating to human rights violations. As Mohammed Alamin reports from northern Nigeria, local rights groups said this trial could serve as a warning to other security officers.
International human rights groups have accused Nigerian army of committing human rights violations. For instance, the state security forces allegedly committed extrajudicial executions, enforced disappearances, the use of torture, looting, and other violations. In order to address such allegations and close the gap with the civil populace, human rights bodies and civil society organizations, the Nigerian Chief of Army Staff, Lieutenant General Tukur Buratai, promised that his force will investigate all cases of human rights complaints brought to their attention. To achieve this, Nigerian Army has got martialed 20 officers and soldiers accused of human rights violations, murder and sales of firearms in the ongoing war against insurgency in northeastern Nigeria. According to General Officer Commanding 7th Division, Victor Ezeogu, over 100 soldiers had been tried and punished at the brigade level over acts of indiscipline and unprofessionalism. A political analyst, Umar Adamu, said the court-martialing of 4 officers and 16 soldiers was a clear indication that the impunity time has gone.
This is a clear indication that rule of law is at work in Nigeria. It is a clear indication also that the era of impunity is gone, where people, simply because maybe they are soldiers or they are police or they are uniformed men, can do whatever they feel and get away with it. At least now people have started developing confidence in this government.
Human rights groups in Nigeria describe the trial of accused soldiers as a sign of justice, hoping that the general court martial will discharge his duties without fear or favor. Abdullahi Inwa is a human rights activist in northern Nigeria.
This is a welcome development. For quite a long time, we have been calling government to that effect to take necessary action. So now that government have realized that it's very, very important to do so and it have started doing so, we truly welcome this development.
Residents in northeastern Nigeria believe the culture of impunity in the past was a contribution factor to the lingering crisis that claimed hundreds of lives in the region. Abubakar Baba Abdullahi is one of the residents of Gombe.
The military has to do a thorough reorganization of their military officers so that there is no part X among them who used to sell the arms and ammunition to the oppositions who are fighting them back. That is why the war against terror in Nigeria does not come to an end, particularly the Boko Haram issue, because there are some saboteurs among the military officers who are sabotaging them for their own personal benefit.
The army has assured the accused persons of protecting their rights. Suspects also have right to appeal for verdicts passed by the General Court Martial at the Appeal and Supreme Court.
Mohammed Alamin reporting from northern Nigeria. And from Maiduguri to Berlin, Germany's biggest city and capital. But that's not all to this German mega metropolis. The city also has some of Germany's most aggressive drivers. And it's no secret in Germany that Berlin's driving instructors are often very impatient with their students. But Victor Boadum is an exception. He is originally from Ghana and teaches mostly Africans who are trying to get a driving license. But a German driving license doesn't often come quite easily, and Boadum's exceptional qualities make him unique in Berlin. DW's Daniel Pels hit the road with him and filed this report.
I think that's right in a way. Anything which is red is not.
It's 11:30 in the morning. Sharon Uzo, a 28-year-old student from Sierra Leone, struggles to get the Volkswagen out of the narrow parking spot. It's her third driving lesson.
You're here with me, right?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Don't worry.
Okay, good.
So good. Release the brake.
Victor Boadum, her driving instructor, sits next to her. He's 54 years old and originally from Ghana. He's been working as a driving instructor since 2006. Most of his pupils are from Africa.
I feel special, you know, driving with these people. I know I'm part of them, you know, and I know their mentality. I know what they think at that moment. I feel I'm like in their shoes, you know. I feel privileged, you know, to be with them and to get them through.
Coach, be brief.
We'll go back again to wing space, yeah? First gear again.
After several minutes of wheel spinning and moving the car back and forth, Sharon finally makes it.
Indicate to the right, look in the mirror, okay. Use free.
Yes.
Indicate our way, and go straight, okay?
As the sun starts to break through the grey clouds, Sharon and Victor drive past the Turkish bakeries, Indian restaurants and German barbershops that line the streets of Berlin's wedding district. The roads here are quite a change from those back at home in Freetown, Sharon tells me.
The difference is that in Germany there are rules and there are traffic lights. You have to face, you have to do these things. So, but in Sierra Leone, the truth is, You just, you can't, you can't, you just drive on your own. It's like you have the rules on your own. So it's only maybe few streets that you get to see, maybe a policeman standing directing.
The blue and red Volkswagen car rumbles over a cobblestone side street past shabby white apartment blocks. Victor has gotten used to Germany's traffic rules. He came to Berlin in 1979. First, he worked for a foreign embassy before becoming a driving instructor. On the streets of Germany's capital, he is still a rarity. The lesson is over after about an hour. Sharon parks the car and breathes a sigh of relief. Victor is already dashing off to the office. Another pupil is waiting. And the next lesson in the streets of Berlin is about to begin.
Daniel Pelz reporting from Berlin.
Your see.
And it's that time of the week when we turn the microphone over to you, the listener, to hear what you have to say about the stories we've been reporting. Sela Oneko and Fred Muvunyi are here with this week's Your Say.
So we've been looking through your Facebook comments and mails, and because we're listening to the great Oliver Mtukudzi right now, we of course have to start with Zimbabwe.
Yes, what's been happening in Zimbabwe, there have been protests of all sorts, a total country shutdown, sit-ins, demonstrations, and now some of the independence war veterans who were formerly very supportive of President Robert Mugabe have openly called for him to step aside.
That's right, and on this, Adisa Maruf from Nigeria wrote, "The news of the rift between Mugabe and the war veterans left me in complete bewilderment." He writes, "I suspect Mugabe, who is now old, is under the control and influence of his entourage, who may stand to gain from the unprecedented discord." Amaruf is worried that this may lead to more rioting and civil strife in Zimbabwe.
Let's hope things remain peaceful. We have another topic that caused quite a discussion on DW's Facebook page, and that's about Turkey and the Gulen schools in Africa.
Yes, since the failed coup attempt in Turkey, the Erdogan government has been cracking down on anything to do with the exiled opponent Fethullah Gulen. And this includes putting pressure on African governments to close down Gulen-funded schools in Africa.
Right. And a comment from Brian Chapman says, "This is an attack on secure education." Anil Eken, however, points out, "Gulen is not secular. He was a member of Erdogan's AKP party. They were close friends, but today they fight each other."
Right, and Aliyu Al-Kassim from Nigeria had this to say. He says, "I'm a hard-die fan of Erdogan, but this time around I'm opposing his decision, because he says the Yobe Turkish International College is the best secondary school in his state, and it provides free education in computing and social sciences. So shutting this down would negatively affect the students and the education system in the entire state."
And last but not least, Usman Bin Affan from Northern Nigeria has a message for Zambia after Thursday's vote. He says the next Zambian leader should focus on uniting the nation and keep in mind that the economy is very important for sustainable development of the country.
Fred Muvunyi and Sela Oneko, thank you. And if you'd like to have your comments read here on Africa Link as well, then send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or you can also send us a text message to +49 160 957 59510. And before we leave for the weekend, a reminder of our main stories. Vote counting is underway in Zambia after nearly 6.6 million people cast their ballot on Thursday's presidential and parliamentary elections and in a referendum on a revised constitution. Germany's Minister for Economic Cooperation and Development, Gerd Müller, is currently in Rwanda discussing a new Marshall Plan for Africa. And the Nigerian army has court-martialed 20 soldiers for allegedly selling arms to terrorists and for murder and human rights violation. That's all we had time for. And as always, thank you for listening. I'll be here with you again on Monday. Do join me if you can. Until then, this is Abubakar Jallow in Bonn, Germany. Have a pleasant weekend.